You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for June 7th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Reince Priebus Race and Gender Sensitivity Firewalk Encounter Weekend, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Perfect. I love the firewalk.
Yeah, because that's what they're doing. They're firewalking right to the college Republican report on how fucked up they are.
Yeah.
And then they're just setting it on fire, because that's really news I'd rather not hear, so it doesn't exist.
Well, significant thing about that report was the question, name a Democrat.
Yeah.
And it was Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, people that actually have held or do hold public office. And then name a Republican is Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck. And I wanted to go over three crooks and liars stories from one day, 2 days ago. Number one, Mississippi governor says educational troubles began when, quote, mom got in the workplace.
Yeah.
And then departing Senator Saxby Chambliss blames military rapes on that hormone level created by nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, finally, Judge Edith Jones, who is a Republican judge from Texas, is accused of saying that certain racial groups like African Americans and Hispanics are, quote, predisposed to crime.
Yeah.
Woo!
Go off the quote, though. Are prone to commit acts of violence.
Prone to commit acts of violence and to be involved in more violent and, quote, heinous crimes than people of other ethnicities.
Uh-huh.
The judge also allegedly said Mexicans would prefer to be on death row in the United States than serving prison terms in Mexico.
Sure.
So it's an insult for the United States to look to the laws of other countries for guidance. So there you go.
Uh-huh.
And well, apparently Edith Jones, Wonkette has a whole series of links about her history of making statements along these lines. So she's a piece of work. But so much for the black and women vote and Hispanic vote. And
so she's not a Lily Tomlin character. She's a real person, what you're saying.
She's a real human being.
Wow.
Yeah, she is.
Wow.
And I wanted to say, too, because we've been talking a little bit this week about, you and I have been talking a little bit about immigration.
Yes.
And the idea that Marco Rubio is now saying he's going to vote against his own bill.
Yeah.
I don't know why he can't amend his own bill to make it what he wants it to be, since it hasn't been voted on yet.
Well, first of all, I'm waiting for him to filibuster his own bill.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Which would be fun.
That'd be hilarious. Uh-huh. I mean, but Mitch McConnell's already done that once.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the thing about the last X number of years has been the number of jaw-dropping exceptions to normal, sane government behavior has grown to the point where that is just expected.
Yeah.
If you had gone back 15 years and said the Republican Party in your lifetime, in the blink of an eye when it comes to politics, will be filibustering its own bill just to deny the Democratic president, who basically wants to implement their policies from 15 years ago, mm-hmm, are so hysterical to tarnish him, trash him, and overthrow his administration, that they are actually trying to deliberately bring the government of the United States to its knees and are filibustering their own bills. You couldn't have convinced a lot of people that was – you couldn't convince liberals, because basically we were out there in the weeds going, yep, this is where we're going. This is a short – once Newt Gingrich became the operating manual for the party, once Rush Limbaugh became the spokesman for the GOP, and once Roger Ailes took over the television communication arm of the GOP, this is where we were going to go. Mm-hmm. And it might have taken 5 years or 25 years, but this is always where we were going to go. And now we're here. And now Marco Rubio is in a weird place, because he will never be able to adjust his own bill enough to make it palatable to the people who voted for him and the people who he wants to impress as a real conservative when he runs for president. So he can't adjust it. He can't tweak it. He can't change it, because if he does, they'll just move the goalposts and make it impossible. And so that's what's freaking out conservatives from six, seven, 8 years ago, are who lost their Senate seat, are the ones who didn't see this coming. Conservatives like Josh Barrow and my perennials like Andrew Sullivan and David Brooks are the ones who never saw this coming. And all they had to do was read liberal essays or talk to any fucking liberal starting in the 80s or before. And to learn that, look, you're setting up an upward ratcheting dynamic that is always going to reward the most extreme behavior until you, as a group, en masse, call out that behavior and throw them out of the party. But when you do that, you will lose elections for a generation.
There's a couple things I want to add to that. One is the Gallup company came out this week with reasons why they got it so wrong in 2012.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that Gallup has a really hard time with is they call landlines.
Uh-huh.
And it skews their results more and more every year. And they finally got tripped by calling landlines to the point where they were calling old white people and finding out who is, you know, voting for whom.
Uh-huh.
The Republican Party, as long as they start in Iowa, are always going to have this problem.
Yes.
Of if that's the first filter you go through, you're going to have to tailor everything you do to a very white, very evangelical, conservative in the worst way, I'm sorry to say, voter. That base voter is going to be the one you have to suck up to for the first 2 years of your campaign. And then you have to etch a sketch yourself. And people can't do that. So that's number one.
Oh. They used to do that, but they never would. They were smart enough not to telegraph that that's what they were doing in the age of YouTube videos.
Right now you can't because everybody's got a record of what you said.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about Marco Rubio, who, by the way, I think I told you last night, in my personal opinion, he has the IQ of a postage stamp. I just think he is not intelligent enough to run for president and succeed. I just think he's dimwitted, but that's my personal take on it. But we have, and this is where I want to get into vocabulary that our listeners can use.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people have crazy Uncle Liberty in their family. And we had a rather shocking email, or I did, from one of our fans who wrote me, and he's blogging now, and was asking me about his aunt. And his aunt literally said, you know, I'm not racist, but.
Yeah.
I'm not racist, but you know that Mexicans are all of them. If when we let them in this country, they are infected by demons. I mean, this is really what she believes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my first reaction is, that's not scriptural. You know, I put on my Bible bitch hat.
I think she's confusing speaking in tongues with speaking Spanish. So.
At any rate, if a lot of people have someone in their family that is just off the deep end. And my response to this is, we do have an immigration problem in this country. The problem is not with people from other countries who want to come here and pay taxes and pay into Social Security and work for a living and make a living for their families.
Right.
The immigration problem is the white supremacist bigots who don't get it that we need these workers in our country.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
And who want, and I'll expand the circle of guilt a little further. And people who want to pay $3 for a lemon, for you know, three lemons for a dollar, and don't want to be told that they can't have that without having cheap illegal labor.
Yeah.
And I want this slave labor produced product because I deserve this level of luxury. And believe me, the amount of consumer goods that we have and take for granted—I mean, everybody—on a daily basis in a historic context. Is staggeringly luxurious. Yeah. We're choking to death on luxury. That all the Caesars and all the popes coming to before the 21st century and or 20th century, all the dictators in history, all of their combined wealth could not buy an iPad.
Right.
And
you and I are working on used laptops and donated microphones and headsets, but all of them were built by cheap labor. Overseas.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is not, we're not casting aspersions on any one segment of the American populace when we say that.
No.
However,
but if you want,
if you deny that,
the consequences,
that's not true about American agriculture, that they depend on this labor and that we don't let enough people in the country legally to do the work that we need to have done in order to afford your lettuce on sale.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the way it is.
That's what prisoners are for, Blue Gal.
Oh. No, they don't do the work. Alabama found that out. It doesn't work.
So we want cheap labor capitalism, and we don't want to know where it comes from.
Right.
And once we find out where it comes from, then that's when we start having these values discussion about those people.
Yep.
And you know, I am not one of those people who automatically discounts denial as dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask someone who is not a bigot, are you a bigot? I'm not going to say racist because, you know, who's not an alcoholic, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
If you ask a non-alcoholic, are you an alcoholic? They're going to say no. And if you ask an alcoholic who's in denial, they're also going to say no. So you can't just say denial is a sign of complicity or guilt or the fact or that you're covering something up. Some people really aren't alcoholics, and mm-hmm. therefore the correct answer is no. But there are so many more people. And this is where the Archie Bunker joins the Klan syndrome.
Yep.
This wonderful episode of the All in the Family, where Archie joined the Klan, and he didn't realize it. He just hung out with a bunch of guys who hated the right people and spoke just like he did and thought just like he did. But until they announced they were going to burn crosses on people's lawns, he had no idea that he had joined the Klan because the overlap between him and them was 99%.
Mm-hmm.
But that 1% I don't actually burn crosses or I don't actually lynch people or I don't actually,
Yeah, but you're one of us, Archie. Don't you understand? Of course you are.
And his family disowned him. Yeah. And his family just, you know, said, that's it. This we will not stand. You will never see your grandchild again. You'll never. His wife just disowned him.
Yeah.
And, oh, Archie, you've gone too far. And you know, and God bless Jean Stapleton because she was the perfect Edith Bunker.
And rest in peace.
Perfect.
Yep.
Remind me a lot of my grandma, actually. Looks the same, talked the same, didn't have that kind of voice, but had that real sweet heart. Although my grandmother was a genius. But that sense that he had no idea that he was doing these things.
Yeah.
Because this was just normal to him. And I firmly believe that people like that really don't think they're racist.
Yeah.
Have no ability. And the reason, and that is a truly crippling disorder because it means they cannot bear the thought of looking at the party they're in honestly. And because they literally, their identity could not stand the pressure of facing who they really are and the party they've really joined honestly, they fall for any liar who comes along and tells them any lie that will let them pretend that the GOP is not a party of bigots.
Yeah.
And that's why Sean Hannity is a rich man today and why Rush Limbaugh is a rich man today and why crazy fucking people on the right keep getting elected.
Yep.
Because the people at the base of that party who are terrified somewhere in their dark little hearts are terrified of the thought that liberals might be right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to jump ahead, but I had a run in with a big time Hollywood actor on the Twitter.
Go right ahead.
Who's nuts. I like his acting. His name is Nick Searcy and he's a perfectly good character actor. He's in Justified. He's very good in that. He was in From the Earth to the Moon, the series, which is very, very good in that. He's very good in a lot of things. And who's just fucking nuts. He's a screeching, right-wing, Breitbart-contributing, Limbaugh-loving, right-wing nut job. And I mean a right-wing fucking nut job. And we had he and a posse of his little minions, 5 or 10 of them, on Saturday, just went round and round. And it was one of those things where I just.
And some of them were into Heinlein.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Well,
I thought was really funny was you mentioning that Heinlein had characters in one of his books that were engaged in incest.
Yeah.
To a positive result.
Yes.
That when you mentioned that on Twitter, that meant you were endorsing.
Yes. All you need to know about this asshole is what he said.
Look what he did. He endorsed incest. No, that wasn't what he was doing.
And I said, yes, I own up to the fact that I have an encyclopedic knowledge of science fiction. And they said, that's all you need to see. Look at that. Nanu. Look at this weirdo.
Yeah.
And I was really nice. I didn't yell. I didn't caps lock yell. I didn't swear. I just kept pushing back going, well, okay. I also have an encyclopedic knowledge of Ayn Rand. And Edgar Allan Poe. So are you against reading generally or just this genre specifically? And why is it bad to have a knowledge of things? Oh, fuck you. But then
you got blocked. That was the
punchline. Punchline of the thing. But we were going back and forth over the history of the Democratic Party because it's really important to lunatics like Mr. Searcy that the past just shut down around 1964. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he waves around the fact that he adopted a son who is a different color than he is as his banner that I'm not a racist. And I'm sure he believes that. I'm sure he believes that of himself. I'm sure he loves his son.
That's not even an issue. I absolutely won't go there.
No, I absolutely.
He went there first is really sad.
Well, he went there first, and I wouldn't take the bait because it's irrelevant. I believe that you love your son.
Yeah.
I believe that you want to raise him right. I believe you're a good actor. But what we're talking about is the history of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and conservatives and liberals during your adult lifetime. And because Mr. Searcy and Peep and his minions cannot face the reality of what happened to the right during their lifetime, they are absolutely detailed masterclass experts at everything liberals have done prior to 1957. They can tell you chapter and verse about Lyndon Johnson led the Dixiecrats in 57 and blocked Dwight Eisenhower, all of which is true. None of which I deny. None of which I don't know of any liberal who denies that at all. What we say is, yes, you're right. There was this faction called the Dixiecrats. And then in 1964, 65, the mass exodus from the Democratic Party began in earnest.
And actually the story of Lyndon Johnson's transformation to someone who was really the only person who could point to the Dixiecrats and say, we shall overcome.
Yep. Yep.
Meaning me too.
Well, only
he was the one who could say that to them.
If I may coin a phrase, only Nixon can go to China.
Exactly.
And only Johnson
from Texas, being the good old boy he was.
Go to the Confederacy.
Go to the Confederacy and point to them in his speech and say, we shall overcome.
But that fact, the fact that that actually happened, and the fact that these people still are hardcore right-wing Republican ideologues and conservatives are not, those two facts cannot be reconciled in their tiny little minds. So for example, Mr. Searcy told me point blank that Strom Thurmond became a Republican because he stopped being a racist.
Mm-hmm.
Strom Thurmond, who led the Dixiecrats, who led the schism against Truman, who was the Dixiecrat Party presidential candidate in 1948, explicitly white supremacist segregationist party, left the Democrats to become a Republican because he spontaneously became not a racist anymore. And that fact, that ludicrous assertion, I'm sure Mr. Searcy really believes that, because the alternative is that he is up to his eyebrows in a party of people who are just as bigoted and just as right wing and just as hateful as that crazy liberal drift class says they are. And he can't live with that fact. Mm-hmm. He can't face the person he would be if that were true.
Well, he can't look to his right at the dinner party he's attending and see the Klansman. He can't do it.
He can't. Yeah. And I don't mean he's physically unable. I mean, he's psychologically, he would implode. Yeah. He would hang himself if he had to face that fact. So
like Archie Bunker had to make that decision, had to decide whether he was going to cross that line or not.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not
calling him a Klansman.
No.
I'm saying that he has joined ranks with the same people.
Exactly.
Who decided that it's perfectly okay to put a black man in the bottom of a lake because he was uppity.
Mm-hmm.
And his
psychological makeup cannot tolerate that.
Yep.
So he will follow liars into hell.
Yep.
And he will vote to cut his own economic throat and destroy his own country because his brain cannot handle that reality. And like the alcoholic who cannot face the fact that the bottle is the problem and will invent any excuse to follow any liar and think of any alibi to avoid discussing that central topic. These guys spent, quite a bit of time desperately trying to deflect, deny, pretend, et cetera, until they were just ranting. And again, I could have had the same conversation in a bar 20 years ago. Except it would have ended, differently because we're on Twitter and you can't hit each other. But the end result is the same, which is that this is who they are. And they're not going to change just because. So the idea that you're going to ever find the magic sentence that will unlock this this realization. And I include in this analysis people like David Brooks, who is
and we've hesitated to talk about David Brooks a little bit from time to time, but your post on David Brooks this week was really good. It reminded me of your post about the dean when he died.
David Broder.
What, David Broder, when he died, that, you know, the tragedy of this guy.
Yeah.
Not calling him an a-hole, not doing anything to sort of just smack him down. But, wow, this is a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead and talk about his column this week.
He wrote this column to address to a specific young man, this young man who thought it would be a really good idea to be a day trader, to be a hedge fund, high velocity hedge fund trader. And he was so good at that as a technology student at MIT that he could make enough money to fund what he really wanted to do, which was research or prevention of malaria. And that's fine. If that seems a little bit of a circuitous way of going about devoting yourself to your passion, but okay. But if you take that guy out of the column and insert a slightly younger David Brooks and have 51-year-old David Brooks addressing 45, 43, 42-year-old David Brooks, not a college student, a full-grown man who's living his life and who has a family and has a career, the interplay, the advice that reticent, humble, don't bash people, pursue your passion, elder David Brooks is giving to the slightly younger David Brooks is tragic. Because David Brooks has written a column explaining why everything that David Brooks has done in his life has been wrong. And that he has become the person that David Brooks said a person should never become.
Mm-hmm.
And he has done it, and he has hidden behind his public mistakes and his incredibly awful record of bashing liberals and siding with fascists while he was working for Bill Kristol. He's now hidden that behind a big pile of bland, passionless, centrist, written by rote columns about how both sides are always wrong, both sides are always bad, because he can't face the fact that he was wrong. And so he's hiding from that fact. But this column is all about you should pursue your passions and don't just become a bland, boring, passionless robot or else you'll miss out. And it really was, you know, in a weird sense, so unself-aware of who he has been and what he has done to get himself his mansion and to get himself his job at Yale and to get himself all of the perks of being America's most prolific conservative public intellectual, that if you read it as him addressing his slightly younger self, it just reads as sad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a writer's decision to make it a snarky, you know, snarky you a-hole column, or a real kind of, this is, you know, other than the fact that he shouldn't be in a mansion, he doesn't qualify for a mansion in my point of view, but that he is a tragic figure in the sense that he has no clue as to how fucking awful he is.
Yep.
And he is so desperately trying to hide from his own past when his past is public. And the only way he's able to hide from his past is a gentleman's agreement among his peers never to mention it.
Yep.
You know, never, you know, don't talk about the fact that so-and-so is a drunk. Because, you know, that would break the bond that we have of never mentioning, you know, don't talk about, it's like he's always in Vegas. And we all agree never to mention the fact that you made your living writing the schlock, the neocon right-wing schlock for Bill Kristol that you now say only an asshole would do. And nobody ever calls you on, well, didn't you, isn't that how you got this mansion? Nobody ever mentions that. And that's how he gets away with it. But it's a tragedy in a sense. And I see it as such.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on.
Yeah.
I want to talk about three stories that came up this week that really do have a link to them.
Okay.
They are related, even though we may not see it at first. But the Verizon data grab, which has come out, there's been a leak of a court order that tells Verizon to give everything to the NSA daily, which has a lot of people upset, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that the Patriot Act said was okay to do.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be shocked by that.
No.
I wanted to quote Andrew Curell at Mediaite, who said, as the last 13 years have proven, regardless of who is in the White House, the security state will continue to expand. And it will take some hypocrisy on both sides to finally end it. This goes along with what I posted over at Pammy Atlas's blog a couple of years ago. mm-hmm. where I just said, let's work together to overturn the Patriot Act, because people were complaining that Barack Obama knew what library books I was taking out and how awful is that. It was perfectly fine when Bush did it, but now no way. And so I said, you're right. It's wrong that the president should know what library books you're taking out. You should repeal the Patriot Act. Let's work together to do that. We can make a big, splashy news story. Blue Gal and Pammy Atlas come together to to shrink the security state that is being built up around us. And her commenters would not do it. They would not agree that the problem was the Patriot Act signed by Bush.
No.
And I would actually disagree with Andrew Carell, who says, as the last 13 years have proven. It's actually as the last 213 years have proven.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that Rachel Maddow's book talks about.
I'm sorry. That's relentless MSNBC Obama apologist, Rachel Maddow.
Right. Relentless MSNBC Obama bot, Rachel Maddow's book, Drift.
Whose entire book is about how awful it is that the security state
has expanded from the dawn of United States history. And I was actually doing a little research on this today about I came across Benjamin Franklin's covert arms for food deal with Bermuda.
Wow.
It was so hilarious to see that. But yeah, Benjamin Franklin covertly wanted to trade food for gunpowder with Bermuda.
Wow.
And the Continental Congress, before the Declaration of Independence, was voting on covert spying everywhere. Canada, Europe, Spain, France, England, their own backyards. They wanted to spy on everybody all the time because secrets. I mean, it's interesting. I came across a Game of Thrones online game this week. Mm-hmm. I didn't play it, but the three weapons you can have in Game of Thrones online are the Iron Sword, money, like, because the Lannisters, that's how they win, is with money. And the third weapon is secrets. And it makes total sense.
Absolutely.
The secrets are a weapon.
They absolutely are. They're a currency.
And I love what Charlie Pierce said, too. Unless your name is Wyden or Udall.
Yeah. Shut up.
Mm-hmm. And I would add Russ Feingold to that, even though he's not in the Senate anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Second story.
If I can interject just one quote. I lost a bunch of books this week.
Oh, yeah. Our basement flooded again. Flooded, and this was bad. This is related to some sewer problems that Springfield is having. And because of failed infrastructure. Yeah.
And so
built enough sewer lines to deal with growth and drainage. And
sewer lines all over the country are, 100 years old. The lines that run from the Chicago water cribs to downtown and feed water the city are, 70 years old, 80 years. They're just ridiculous. They were supposed to be replaced decades ago. They aren't. But our house, which survived a massive flood 4 years ago, 3 years ago, with a trickle of water. Is that true?
Well, it wasn't a massive. The river, our street becomes a river from time to time, just flash flooding.
It was notable.
And it was notable. And the kids were walking with their up to their shins in water, which is not safe. But of course, they ran out there and treaded water. It was in the daytime that this happened.
And our neighbors, some of whom have been here for 10 years or more, remember that flood and one before that. And
2007, I believe it was.
2010. And there was another
2010.
One.
2010. Yeah, 2010. You're right. 2010.
But those are,
because I moved here in 2008. So yeah, it was 2010 that there was a river in front of our house.
Yeah. And there was a trickle in the basement.
Yeah. And they're
all saying, it gets humid down there. There's a trickle. It's all sloped downwards. It goes to the drain. So this is built to handle that.
Right.
What happened this last week?
Friday night.
Was not that bad in comparison.
Well, yeah, the street became a river again, but then the floor drain backed up and had water actually literally bubbling out of it.
Shooting out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that had never happened before.
Never,
I asked
ever,
our neighbors.
Ever.
That, no.
That's never happened in any home I've ever lived in.
No. And that was related to the sewer collapse.
Right.
That we're believing. But anyway, I split my library in half before I moved here. And I have now lost another small portion of it, which is annoying because when you've spent months sort of okay, I can keep this, but not that, and this, but not that.
Yeah, and you've been agonizing, and now you finally boiled it down to things you really wanted to keep, so nothing down there that got damaged was anything that was really disposable in your mind.
No. So in honor...
And just to be clear, this was not sewer water, thank God, that went into our basement. It really was backup from...
Runoff
from the street, but it still had silt in it, and it was just gross, and it took a lot of cleaning up and a lot of tragic saying goodbye to some things that mattered.
We didn't lose any people. The house still stands. My Irish writer's imagination ran amok.
Yeah, we had to hug it out that night. We did. Yeah. It was hard.
We're going to lose the whole house. It's going to collapse.
It's okay.
No, it's going to be fine. And a week later, you know, all the wet, moldy, and believe me, if you have allergies or asthma.
Yeah, you have asthma. That's pretty bad. And
it's also the
ceiling is so low. I finally convinced you to put a helmet on.
You did.
We're down there.
I did. But I have actually a couple of scalp wounds.
Yep.
Because
your head on those.
About 6 inches lower than my head. Yeah. This is all just, you know, homemaker stuff. But in honor of the tiny portion of my library that I have lost, I would like to quote Charles Dickens.
Okay.
If the law supposes that, then the law is a ass, a idiot. Now, I realize I should say an ass, an idiot, but that's Dickens. And the problem with the Patriot Act is its existence.
Yes.
As long as these things are legal, they will be done. Mm-hmm. And I will never again make the mistake, at least I hope, of hoping that anyone in the White House will not use I use this analogy today in a post today. I have stepchildren I love dearly, but they negotiate like the most vicious.
Especially at bedtime.
At bedtime, the amount of posturing and pushing and haggling and negotiating and threatening. But see, 8 months
ago. Particularly with one of them. I think it's really one of them.
It is.
The youngest one is the one who just resists bedtime.
And the loophole parsing and the exceptions and the deflection that would make the crew of the Enterprise in awe.
But you said 16 months ago that I could stay up till 9:15 in the summertime. What?
Well, then how come you couldn't remember the homework you were supposed to do tonight?
Yeah.
But the point being that government will always push right up to the limit.
Yep.
And the grown-ups have to enforce those limits. And if
and this gets back to the sort of overarching theme of this, if you don't mind if I just continue.
No, absolutely.
We discovered a study this week that there's a big difference in possession of pot as to whether you'll get arrested between whites and African Americans.
Shocking, I know.
Yes. And I've often said, you know, that marijuana would be legalized if we would just go through all of the penthouses in Manhattan and arrest anybody that has pot sitting in their bedside. Then all of a sudden something major would happen. And Lawrence O'Donnell said the same thing this week. You know, no one would put up with it if we went to the higher level colleges around the country and started arresting kids for pot possession.
Mm-hmm. Like Barack Obama.
Right.
Like young Barack Obama.
And all kinds of people in the Congress have tried pot. So,
well, it's like
that.
This is there's a very clear similarity, not identical, similarity with Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the people who are being affected aren't
this is my
kids.
Yeah, this is my point. And then finally, Bradley Manning. And I want to thank Ari Melber for talking about Bradley Manning at a time when I could sit down and listen to him.
Uh-huh.
Because I missed so much of the Bradley Manning story in the noise that has gone on, primarily from the left of, you know, he's a hero. He's innocent. He's a First Amendment martyr and he's being tortured and on and on and on. And never getting to the point of, and this is where it always was in the back of my mind. He signed up for this.
Yeah.
He signed up to be in the military and to buy into that rule book.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a Code Pink member who came across this information and released it to the media for the sake of a political angle. This is someone who signed up to be in the military, follow the military rules, signed a contract to do that. This became really alive to me this week when I donated blood, as I do every 8 weeks, and saw on the paper, noticed for the first time, that if you're a member of the military, if you're an active duty member of the military, you sign a release to the blood bank that they are going to test your blood for AIDS and malaria and a couple other diseases, and they will report the results to your commanding officer.
Uh-huh.
End of story. Not, yeah. This isn't optional. This isn't, they're going to test this blood. You need to sign that you are, what your unit is, who your commanding officer is, et cetera. You have to put all that information on the form, and they're going to test it. And that's part of their job as mm-hmm. a blood bank, is they test your blood for these diseases and they report it to your commanding officer. You don't get any privacy about that. No. There's nothing. That's it.
Which is not to say that there should not be leakers.
No, absolutely not. Well, that was what Ari Melber broke through my consciousness about. And I apologize to Bradley Manning and anyone that I've ever disagreed with about this, because I just didn't hear it before. I didn't hear the details and the nuance of what is actually going on before this week. Uh-huh. And I consider myself an informed person, and yeah. I didn't get it the way I got it when he said when Ari Melber said what he said about this, which is, look, Bradley Manning has pled guilty.
Right.
He's pled guilty to leaking. He's pled guilty to all of the crimes of breaking his vow to the military.
His contract.
His contract with the military.
Yep.
He's already served almost 3 years, but he's up for 20 years based on his guilty pleas.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're talking about here is he a traitor or not? Is he... Yeah. And this is a ramping up by the federal government to someone who has no voice, the lowest level person, when uh-huh. upper level people leak all the time.
Yeah.
And do leak. I mean, Karl Rove and Scooter Libby and all, you know, do serious damage to people in on the field on behalf of our country. And there's no question that Bradley Manning didn't have any motive to do that, because his leak was so kind of broad and wild in a way. But, you know, the fact that Bradley Manning has pled guilty to doing what he did, and this is a question of the federal government deciding, we're really going to use him as an example and put him away for life so that nobody ever does this again in any circumstance.
A head on a spike.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what he is. And mm-hmm. that, to me, is much more nuanced and puts me on the side of Bradley Manning.
Yes, exactly.
Far, far more convincingly than a code pink person wearing a T-shirt that said, he's my hero. You know, that's not the point. The point is the federal government's trying to make him an example when he doesn't deserve that.
Yeah. And the people who, this is where I like it when grownups have these conversations.
Well, and this gets back to what you just said, which is when the powerful and privileged are inconvenienced, it won't happen.
Right.
When it's going to benefit the powerful and privileged, it will happen.
And nobody
whether
said.
Whether it's the Verizon data grab, the Bradley Manning thing, or the pot bus, mm-hmm. life's a shit sandwich.
Well, and this is where the lawyerly parsing, the sort of cold-blooded lawyerly parsing on the part of the left as well as the government of what does it mean to be a whistleblower? What does it mean to be a journalist and your First Amendment protections? Well, under your definition of those things, Karl Rove was a whistleblower.
Yeah, right.
Judith Miller was a reporter.
Yeah, yeah.
And any anonymous source who says, you know, I want to slander someone, but I will, we've talked about this before, I can't just talk shit about somebody, so I'll tell you, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
And then you'll become a journalist and I'll become your source.
And I'll say some people say.
Yeah. And then we'll build an empire, call it Fox, and we'll make $1 billion
off it. $1 billion off of it. Absolutely. Yeah.
But the idea that this person is being really made an example of above and beyond what he's already pled guilty to. Mm-hmm. That to me is inexcusable.
Yep.
But it is impossible for me to hear that very reasonable argument over the sound of me being called an obot.
Yeah.
And a liar and an incompetent and a stooge. Yeah. And I just shut down. I'm like, fuck you.
Well, I guess that's why I hadn't really, and I'm not making excuses for myself, because I run a podcast and I am responsible for knowing this stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm blaming myself for not knowing this stuff, but the noise level has been so high
mm-hmm.
that I missed this part. I missed the part where Bradley Manning took responsibility for what he did and said, yeah, I cop to it.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about, you know, and I'm more than willing to talk about how was he treated in jail, how, you know, these kind of things come into it as important. Once we get over the hurdle in my mind of he's a member of the military, he signed this contract and he broke this contract, he's admitting to that, then let's talk about all these other factors and treat him fairly based on that. And that's important to do. And I'm for that and pro WikiLeaks in terms of, you know, everybody. I've had discussions on Twitter with people about Julian Assange being a lousy lay. That's a side thing. But this idea that once something comes out or is available that you are guilty if you publish it is
That's bullshit. That is bullshit. But the idea that that an indiscriminate document dump of every government secret would be a good thing, I would disagree with. Governments have to have secrets. Governments have to be able to do things.
But is it a secret when 1.4 million people have security clearance?
Yeah, that's the argument we should have.
Yes, we should be having the argument, of a security state that has just run totally out of whack.
Absolutely. Yep. And that is the conversation I want us to be having, not the no matter what gets disclosed, no matter what volume, no matter what, under what circumstances, the person who does the document dump is always right, always a hero.
Yeah.
And the people who had their emails and their cables and their everything else just dumped are all trying to keep secrets.
Yeah.
There's something in there that will justify this behavior. And I don't buy that. It is simply a matter of the nature of things the government has to be able to do, but they've gone wildly over the line. And that's where we have to tell them it's bedtime.
and the snippy whining of obviously gay diplomats around the world about, oh, look at his hair. You know, that's not worthy of throwing someone in prison for life.
No, but it's also not worthy of
security clearance.
It's also not worth leaking.
No, it's not worth WikiLeaks publishing it either. Yeah,
that's the thing. It's also that's gossip and that's what e-entertainment is for. I would also like to point out, as long as we're on the subject, this will take just a second. I wrote a very positive post about Mr. Glenn Greenwald today, because I think what he did about NSA
wire. This is the time when you thank God for Glenn Greenwald.
Frank, exactly.
It is.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And I think because I've been needling him and pulling apart his columns and finding parts that I disagree with. And I will write this up more consciously and soberly later. But really what I think, in my subjective writer's opinion, let me be clear about that. This is me personally speaking as a writer and editor with some experience.
And not speaking for the professional left podcast.
No, I'm not speaking for the left, I'm not speaking for liberals, I'm speaking as a writer. Glenn has no problem researching, and he has no problem putting sentences together. He has written books that were bestsellers, and he has no problem with what he needs is a fucking editor. What he needs, if he wants to be persuasive, he needs someone to go through his column with a red pen saying, see this part here where you're making this really good point, and then you go out of your way to say that Rachel Maddow is a fucking bitch and she's an apologist. That's not helpful.
Yeah.
See this part here where you're making this really excellent point about First Amendment freedoms, and then you go off and say, anyone who disagrees with me is an asshole, an obot, and a whining, complaining emo prick. That's not helpful.
Well, and this gets – let's skip over one point to go on to the next, which is leave the first lady out of politics. Context is everything, and you can be as right as rain about your issue, but if you're interrupting the first lady talking about children to get your issue out there when everyone in the room would agree with you.
Yes.
Context is important, and don't bite off your nose to make a point about, you know, that might be absolutely correct. And that you're totally passionate about. And it's hard sometimes. It is hard. That's why editors are helpful. And having guidelines, having some sort of group decision or backup to what you're doing is sometimes a good idea.
And when I was receiving criticism, mind you, it took me a long time to not take every one of them personally.
Yeah.
From good seasoned writers who just were like, no. I mean, when a writer who has written many novels and is a good editor sits me down going through one of my short stories and basically crosses off the first five pages and said, your story starts here. The rest of this is crap. Throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, there's all these good sentences and shit. But they were right.
Yep.
And learning when – and this is something that as a blogger, I'm very sympathetic with, because I don't have time to write – let it sit on the shelf for long enough to cool down so that my editing brain can come in and maybe, you know, save me from some stupid mistakes. But having a really good editor has been a salvation to me in my writing and being someone else's good editor. Always asking the question, who are you addressing this to? What are you trying to do? What are you hoping to accomplish? Even if it's fiction, what emotional state do you want to leave your reader in? What about this? This is where you're, if that's your goal, you know, tell me specifically who you're trying to convince, what your message is, and what you're trying to convey. Mm-hmm. Overall, what would you like people to walk out the door with when they're done? Okay, here, and here is when you are going off message.
Yep.
When you're working out some petty personal thing that you might have every reason to be that, but it has no business in the middle of this story.
Right.
That's a different story. Go write that someplace else. That is a really important tool, and I really do think for all of the bashing I've done to Mr. Greenwald, and we're asking really, I think, legitimate questions about, okay, if you believe this, then doesn't it mean you must also embrace this other position, which you refuse to do? I think those are all legitimate. But overall, I think, honestly, subjectively, he needs an editor. Mm-hmm. If he wants to do...
And he's not the only one. I mean, there is this cadre of African-American women on Twitter that I follow,
uh-huh.
for whom... And I'm not going to call them bots, and I'm not going to call them names at all because they're very passionate. But Barack Obama can absolutely do no wrong.
Yes.
And don't get me started about Michelle. And they will cut a bitch if anyone says anything about Barack Obama. They are disrespecting him. They are. And I see where that passion comes from, and I appreciate it. And I follow these women, and I listen to what they're saying, and I'm not being hypercritical of them at all. But if they were writing for Salon,
exactly,
they need an editor. Yeah, yes, they need an editor to make their argument. And 140 characters is not where you.
And I use use polemics and I use snark and I swear on my blog,
mm-hmm.
and because I have no editor. It's something I do for my own pleasure. I occasionally get a contribution, but largely it is a labor of love. I don't know that it's going to go anywhere ever except where it is now. And I don't have to be answerable to a viewing public or any sort of review group or to my boss.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to do whatever I want, which is kind of cool. And Mr. Greenwald is not obliged in any way to listen to me. But I think he suffers for a lack of someone looking over his shoulder saying, do you really want to go all the way out of your way just to kick that one person in the balls? Because the rest of this column is really straightforward. It's good. It's analytical. It's sharp. It's swift. It gets to the point. It's really good reading. You make your point powerfully, and then you go right off the rails because you can't resist going across the street to piss on someone who you think is an asshole because they disagree with you.
Yep.
And it sounds petty, and it sounds vindictive, and it makes you look small. And that's what people like Driftglass remember about your column. It's like, wow, that's really great. And then he decided to call me an asshole for no reason other than I disagree with him 10% of the time. And I think an editor would solve that problem. But that's my subjective opinion.
I want to finish with Spider Robinson.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, what is the difference between Chris Christie's lap band and Michael Douglas's dental dam? That's the riddle I've written this week, and I don't have an answer yet, but I'm working on it.
Well, we're gonna say it's a Zen koan. You just think about it and muse on it, and
you muse on it for a while and see. But boy, Chris Christie, boy, he just did himself in on the White House run this week, I think.
Well,
mad at him.
Everyone's mad at him, and I don't care as much as I should. I mean,
I don't care either.
What they should do is put Roland Burris in there because Roland Burris, for those of you who don't know, is the sort of was the default go-to position to fill Barack Obama's seat.
Yep.
After Rob Blagojevich tried to sell it and since gone to jail for lots of other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always like, oh, he's that guy.
Yeah,
we need a guy to come in and, you know, be a senator for like 8 weeks and just do some votes and not really be problematic. And Roland Burris, who is, I think this is right, has his mausoleum already built and has sort of like
he's a millionaire and he's.
Well, he has a great deal of regard for Roland Burris.
Yeah.
And thinks very highly of Roland Burris. Yeah. But he's reliable, and he's if he's still alive, I feel terrible if he had passed away and I didn't know it, but I don't think he has. He's like 70s, in his 70s, and I'm sure he will go anywhere to be a senator for 6 weeks. So that would have been the wise choice. Absent that, you know, I don't know what sort of politics Mr. Christie is playing. I do know that in politics, the first important thing to do is win.
Yep.
And
And he wants to win. Excuse me. He wants to win as governor.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really care about anything beyond that. And that's actually wise politically to focus on the race at hand. But
well, and think about all the people in the conservative.
This idea of that he doesn't care how much this election is going to cost is kind of hilarious.
If
I was
that's
a teacher
joke.
In New Jersey, I would just be on fire.
I would interrupt him during a speech.
Yeah. Oh.
I was going to mention glitter bombing in that regard, but just to say that that sort of thing sort of had its moment and went away. And it's the idea that you realize the only people who will ever see this on the shaky iPhone video that you're going to post are going to see the back of your head for 10 seconds, a shouted message, and then you're going to disappear. Mm-hmm. And you're going to look really good to your peers, and they're going to go, yeah, man, you really told them off. But that's pretty much how far those things usually go.
Yep.
Mike Wallace did in Richard Nixon by calling him out, but he could do it as a reporter.
Yeah.
Asking a question on camera. But by and large, going shouty crackers at a meeting, even if I agree with your issue and you're doing it really well and you are well within your rights to do it. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the First Amendment. I don't know how much that helps your cause other than solidifying your position within your own group.
Yep. And I want to add to I don't want to get too deep into the Michael Douglas issue, but the change in dialogue that we're going to have about the HPV vaccine.
Yeah.
Now that it's about the tongues of old white men.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can't be about punishing young girls for having hoo-has. This is about us. This is about the privileged white guy.
Oh, there'll be a pill. Don't worry, honey.
There'll be a pill.
There'll be a pill. It'll be covered by Obamacare. It'll be covered by Medicare.
All set.
Yeah. They will deliver it in your mail. You'll see commercials on it during the middle of the day, during Jeopardy.
If your tongue has an erection lasting more than 4 hours, you should see a doctor. Yeah. So all of a sudden, the adjustment that will happen because it's about guys. Yeah.
Funny.
It's
funny. Joan never asked for a second helping of my coffee. Yeah. And it'll become just a thing that you take because you want to have sex and you're 72.
Yeah.
And that's great. And that's a good thing. The net result will be less people getting illness. And that's a good thing. But
And more money for big pharma. But, you know,
there is that.
We can work on that later. Mark Maron had someone on his show talking about this whole idea of patenting podcasts where Apple just basically gave this guy $8 million to go away.
Yeah, well, he
patented the not the actual podcast. He didn't do it. He just had he had patented the idea of doing it.
It was
right?
Mark Maron. He was a guest on NPR.
Okay.
But that's exactly right.
The notion of podcasting was patented.
Yeah.
Right.
By a guy whose name eludes me, but I'm sure it will come back to me later. I remember Maron's.
I wish I had a reason for Apple to just give me $8 million to go away.
Yeah. Well, you know, he had this idea a long time ago of downloading music from the internet and having it on a list. And since the technology wasn't available and nothing else was available, I didn't read the patent. I have no idea what it says, but basically it came down to him downloading to cassette tapes, music to cassette tapes off the internet. And he apparently wrote a broad enough patent, and his patent attorney helped him write a broad enough patent that 15 years later, they said, hey, you know this podcast thing? That's sort of like that idea you had back during the Eisenhower administration. And he started suing people because he didn't ever build a podcast. He didn't develop the technology for a podcast. He didn't develop the transfer protocol for a podcast. He didn't develop any of the shit that you actually have to do. He didn't make it embeddable. He didn't make any sort of video players or audio players. He didn't invent Blogger, that's for sure. But he invented the notion of taking stuff off the internet and putting it on a thing so you could play it later on a list. And that makes him apparently able to sue you for having a podcast because you're using his idea. And that's just hilarious.
Yep.
So Apple went to the break room, went through the sofa cushions, came up with $8 million and said, go away. And what will come of that with people who don't have $8 million, like Mark Maron, I have no idea. But it reminded me of a story by Spider Robinson, one of my favorite writers, who is not Robert Heinlein, but who wrote a wonderful essay about Robert Heinlein that I won't bore you with. I think his essay was called Melancholy Elephants, and it was about the tragedy, more or less. I'm doing this from memory. The tragedy of remembering too much. That one of the great gifts of humanity is forgetting, is sort of letting things go and letting them slide over time. There's only 88 keys on the piano. If you patent the noise all of them makes, everybody would owe, you know, the first piano maker all their money. That we create things and invent things and refine things and talk about things, and then we sort of forget about them. And wouldn't it be a tragedy if we all carried around all the memories of all humanity all the time, every day? Now, the flip side of that is, I think the great blessing and curse of being a liberal is we have pretty good political memories. You know, we remember the 60s. We remember the 50s. Even if we weren't alive then, we acknowledge that they existed, and they inscribed a certain political arc across the sky that we're now living with. But there is a certain elegance in rediscovering things and letting things go and letting them slide, in putting them away. And having just seen a whole bunch of my photographs and notes, I threw away a whole notebook of story ideas that just was green and white goo from our flood, from probably the late 80s, early 90s. I carried around with me for a long time. And it was a little black notebook with a little lined paper in it. And I had stuff written down in there from decades ago, story ideas, all kinds of notions. And that's all gone now. And there's a certain sadness to that, but that's sort of how life works. You know, and I salvaged what I could and carried forward what I had and counted my blessings that I didn't live in Oklahoma.
Yeah. But I mean, well, and someone said that to me the other day, or I read it, that if you put all of your problems in a pile, did I say this last week? You put all of your problems in a pile and everyone else put all of their problems in a pile and you got to pick, you'd run over and pick your problems.
Every day.
Every day.
First of all, we get to do this every week.
Yes,
we do. Even though you're running off in a couple of minutes to officiate at a wedding.
Yes.
So we're sort of cramming this in
reading
before.
At a wedding, yes.
You're reading at a wedding. And, but we get to do this. We have literally thousands of listeners now. Listen to us and write us really cool notes and correct
really
us.
Really great letters and send us $5 from time to time or more. And we're so grateful to you.
And copies of books and they stay
in
touch.
Thank you, Raymond, for the books. They were awesome. We're glad to have them. And
so, no, I will grab my pile of troubles over almost anybody else's almost any day. Yeah. I was just kind of.
We have each other.
Yeah. Well, and I was kind of amused by the fact that, you know, what I lost were old things from a previous life.
Yeah.
And I want a few fragments of those to remember and to invoke memory. And because, you know, the writer's great gift is memory, being able to sort of transmogrify what really happened into what wouldn't it be cool if that did happen. So I want enough around to remind me in my dotage of of the time I dressed up as a knight to entertain my nephews when they were 50s and 60s. But beyond that, it's just stuff, and it goes away, and the stuff I have left is far more precious to me than anything I lost. So I'm not a melancholy elephant.
Yeah, not a melancholy elephant who can't forget, but can't let it go. Yeah. Oh, very, very good.
Yeah.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is named Bear. Bear likes wrapping paper. We know a few cats that like wrapping paper also. Yes. You can send your Internet Kitty. This is a great picture of Bear, by the way, in the wrapping paper. So go look at it at our Facebook page and our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. And we love hearing from you. Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at any address, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions, plural, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are totally ready to take out some Lannisters.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional F Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Spoiler.
Stop it with the spoilers.
Internet kitties are mad at the Lannisters for some reason. You're giving it all away.
I T-voted. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Yes. The Lannisters did something very bad.
You know what? You're the FBI director and you're Kaiser Soze.
I am.
And I have a very interesting Stump the Chump this week.
You do?
Yes. It does not have to do with science fiction. It has to do with the history of the blogosphere, the liberal blogosphere.
Ah.
It's from your friend at Magnolia ePublishing.
Oh, yeah.
He just decided to throw this out to us. We're so appreciative.
Thank you.
It's 10 questions on old school blogging.
Well, he's the gentleman who sent along CDs of a certain author that I was a great admirer of and now have chatted with on the phone on a few occasions. Thank you very
Harlan
much.
Ellison.
Harlan Ellison.
Sent you the speeches of Harlan Ellison.
He did.
Which is so cool. And that Harlan Ellison is an entertaining joie de vivre.
He is. You know what he is?
What?
He's a raconteur.
He's got a gift of the gab. I know someone else like that.
He's like a fucking Dave Allen, if you ask me, except he's got all five fingers and 10 fingers.
And he's very devoted to his wife, you are. So,
who has saved his life on many occasions.
Good.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for, honey.
As has mine.
Yes.
So
let's answer 10 questions on
the early days.
The old days, yeah. The good old days. This is very self-indulgent on our part, but we're allowed to do that.
Back in the pioneer days of blogging.
So what was the original name of the blog Media Horse Online?
Oh, Media Whores Online.
You're right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All right. Number two.
All right.
What was Fitzmas?
Oh, Fitzmas was the celebration of the day that Patrick Fitzgerald was going to indict Karl Rove.
Right.
Which never happened.
Right.
But, even though a certain, at the time, very well-respected alternate liberal, quote-unquote, news site that still exists, swore on a stack of Bibles that it had anonymous sources and insider information that was absolutely certain that indictments had already been written and were going to come down within a few days.
Yep.
It's sort of our Whitey tape.
It is.
except, 8 years later, we're not still fucking that chicken, you know?
No, we're not.
No.
You'll know this one. What new government agency had a logo that was dubbed the Masonic Tractor Beam?
Oh, I used to have this on my business card.
And your business card.
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
It was the Total Information Awareness Network.
That's right. It had a pyramid with an eye on top shining a light on a globe of the earth.
Yeah, it was.
And you had this on your Driftglass business card.
I still do. Yeah, I still do. My Driftglass. I showed that when I used to teach technology classes. I would show that to my class and going, you should be really concerned about this. This is not your future. This is your present.
This is your present. Number four. This woman has many nicknames, one of which is the anorexic Aryan.
Oh, God.
Who is she?
Well, that would be Ann Coulter, I'm guessing.
Right. It's Ann Coulter.
Yeah.
All right. Number five. She blew $10 million on her Senate campaign. Her campaign staff walked out on her twice.
Uh-huh.
She wore very tight-fitting blouses.
Uh-huh.
But that's not what she's infamous for. Who is she and what was it?
Is she infamous for destroying HP?
No. Good close guess. Yeah. Good guess. No.
Because she also blew a whole stack of cash on
a Senate campaign.
Uh-huh.
No, this is someone else.
Joe Lieberman?
No, she wears tight-fitting blouses because of her breast enhancement surgery.
Oh. I can't think of it.
Catherine Harris in Florida.
Oh, yes.
Well known for
being crazy.
For being crazy and the Florida voter purge and also showing her boob profile to Hannity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. She was a piece of work. Yeah.
That, in fact, unbelievable.
If you haven't read seen the movie Recount.
Oh, yeah. You should see her.
In all her glory.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I am going to read you 4 quotes. I'm not going to tell you who they are.
All right.
Or am I? I guess I will.
Robert Heinlein.
No. Tom Clancy said, I think he's probably been dead for quite a while. Rush Limbaugh said, I think he was incinerated in Tora Bora. Fred Barnes said, I think they're all buried now, all 3 of them. And Pat Buchanan said, he is no longer vertical. He's gone.
Uh-huh.
Who were they talking about?
Osama bin Laden.
Yep. There you go.
Who wasn't?
Who wasn't?
At all.
At all.
And it's useful to remember that, that the entire Bush administration used pursuit of that one person to take us into 2 wars and never got it done. Lied us into a 2nd war. Lied us into the Patriot Act, which we are still living with.
We're going to talk about that on the podcast.
Yeah.
All right. And by the way, we record this section of the show first to warm ourselves up.
We do.
So just if anybody, if there's any, if there's ever any lack of continuity, that's what's going on there. Number 7. What short-lived TV anthology series had an episode where the reanimated corpses of American soldiers got up and voted?
Reanimated.
It was from 2005.
So it wasn't Ally McBeal.
Right.
Okay. And it wasn't Who's the Boss.
It was a show called The Masters of Horror, and it was an episode called Homecoming.
Okay. Never saw it.
What blogger's motto is like kryptonite to stupid?
Oh, that'd be Oliver Willis.
Yep, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9. What is the current web address of a blog that used to be at atrios.blogspot.com?
Oh, I believe that's Eschaton.
That's right.
Yeah.
And last but not least.
Who has never linked to me?
He retweeted you this week, didn't he?
I did. He did.
He did.
Not knowing who I was. Because I'm Mr. Electrico on Twitter. I'm Drift Classic.
Oh, that's right.
But
that's right.
In 8 years, Duncan Black has... I used to actually be a commenter at his place and a fairly prolific one. And it just... There was this thing that he had this really clear focus on the 5 people that he was going to be... linking to and talking about, and I wasn't one of them, and I would never going to be one of them, and so I gradually lost interest in rocking on and more thread. But yeah, that was those are the days, Blue Gal.
Those are the days. Number 10. What was the HBO documentary Left of the Dial? What was the subject of that documentary?
Left of the Air America.
That's right. Oh, you got a lot of them right.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay.
And do you remember
to celebrate our own history there a little bit?
Do you remember a blog called Fafblog?
Fafblog. Of course, I remember Fafblog.
Yeah.
I sent money to Fafblog. They don't write anymore, and everybody's really mad at them.
They went away.
They shouldn't have gone away because they were very funny.
Yeah. One day we should sort of.
I suspect that they were professional in some way.
Yes.
Professional comedians, and that they just ran out of time. But they were very good.
One day we should maybe do an in memoriam of the blogs that have left.
Yeah.
The bloggers are still around, but.
Yeah, because there are some really great blogs out there that are no longer posting, and quite a few. And a lot of them were very, very good. It's hard to keep those things going if you're not crazy. I'm just going to put it that way.
Well.
Because doing this for as many years as you and I have done it without funding and.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have a commitment that goes beyond justifying it, except in your own artistic mind.
And speaking of justified, we're going to talk about Nick Searcy, the actor.
We're going to do that in the podcast
later in our show. But
in our show.
That was a wonderful, wonderful trip down memory lane.
Thank you very much letting us do that. And we'll be back to science fiction next week. Oh, Drift Class, we had one other question from a listener who wanted to know what we thought of steampunk. And I haven't read a lot of steampunk, but I admire steampunk a great deal. The artistic milieu of steampunk is really cool and much more influential than anyone thinks it is.
Yeah.
I mean, both Sherlock Holmes movies were completely steampunk.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a number of other places where you can see the influence of that. I think there's the influence of steampunk in Downton Abbey. I think you see it in Game of Thrones. Absolutely. Lots of movies have this kind of anti-technology, what happens when that's not available motif.
Well, and steampunk is visually very interesting.
Very interesting. And there are some good writers in that genre. I know, I just haven't read them yet. So,
well, and a lot of it is sort of hinges on a what if Babbage's difference engine, mm-hmm. and analytical engine had actually become computers, literally become like mechanical computation devices that had some of the versatility of computers in an age when things were powered by steam.
Right.